This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast, and this is a joint edition once again with Mr. Mike Ergo of the Transitions from War Podcast, U.S. Marine Corps veteran and triathlete and supporter of Gold Star Families. Really awesome guy that we've been collaborating with over here for the past couple of weeks. We've got a really awesome book that we're covering today. And this is one of the most influential books on my life over the past year. And that's 12 Rules for Life by Dr. Jordan Peterson. Really just fantastic book that goes over some very simple, but also very deep concepts that anyone should consider as they are moving forward in life and trying to make the most out of this life. So I'm not going to go into what the book's about right now. We'll cover that in the episode. And you know, me and Mike, we're good at talking about things. Well, maybe not. Depends on how you look at things. But I want to encourage everybody, don't just listen to this show. Definitely go out there and get the book. I got the Audible version, and it was great because Dr. Peterson, he read it himself. And so you can hear him emphasize certain points and really get into, the important concepts there. So definitely check this book out, 12 Rules for Life. And I just want to say before we get into the episode, this podcast would not be possible without the good people over at F-Bomb Nutrition. They make awesome, delicious packages of fats. So they make macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate. They mix them up with sea salt, with coconut butter, with pecan butter. They're so good. Head over to www.dropanfbomb.com. Use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout. You'll get 20% off your first order. And with that, that's all I got, guys. Let's get into this awesome conversation with Mike Ergo on Dr. Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. What is going on, everybody? Welcome back. This is Chris Albert and Mike Ergo. We're here to talk to you today about, we're going to talk about Jordan Peterson's book, 12 Rules for Living, right? And, that's a great book. I love that book. I just listened to it. I finished listening to it last month. And the thing about driving while listening to that book is that it could be hazardous because it kind of like drew me in. I was like on the freeway and Jordan Peterson's talking about just stuff. And I'm like, shit, like this shit is so engaging. I'm almost crashing into the cars in front of me. But did you listen to it or did you read it, Mike?
I listened to it, and similar thing. I seem to arrive places without knowing, really remembering the drive. I think he's got a kind of a hypnotic voice, and I'm always, you know, he's got that Kermit the Frog voice too.
Yeah.
But it really is so engaging that I think more than other books, I didn't have to really force myself to pay attention. It was that engaging.
Yeah. The way the voice sounds, it's like a 1950s dad who was like perfectly Christian, came back and was going to give you some lessons about living. And he calls you things like bucko, things like that. Yeah, that's the way I got. But I love the book. I love Jordan Peterson. It's just like, it was the way he talks because he's super Canadian and everything. He read his own book.
that kind of stuff was there. But
I like when they read their own books, because like I was reading when we're listening to Dave Goggins' book.
Yeah.
It was read by that other guy, and it was hard for a while to really take that seriously until I really got into it. But with Peterson, I mean, he knows his inflections, he knows the tones. When you read your own book, you know how it's supposed to sound.
Yeah, that's what I appreciate about like Jocko and Leif Babin and guys who do that. Because I've listened to some books where the author didn't read the book, and they have I'm listening to Dave Asprey's book right now, right? The Game Changers. And so Dave Asprey has I'll just say it. He's got kind of a feminine voice, right? And so part of it was I was running while I was listening to it, and they said, okay, Dave Asprey's reading, and he's reading the beginning of every chapter, but a professional, speaker, professional reader's taking over. And when they said a professional reader's taking over, I was like, oh, thank God, I don't have to listen to Dave Asprey anymore. But then he hired a professional reader, I think, that sounds like he wants to sound. And so it was super alpha voice. So it was like, the professional reader comes on and he's like, you must take vitamin D to ensure that your testosterone rises appropriately and things like that. And I'm like, all right.
Yeah, sometimes it's trying a little too hard.
Yeah. Yeah. But Jordan Peterson's book was awesome. What's one of the biggest things you've taken out of it?
I think the first one, stand up straight with your shoulders back, that rule just started to change. I started to evaluate all the ways in which my posture was either a reflection or affected how I was interacting with people and how I was viewing myself and what I was presenting to the world. I started to think of different ways in not where I slump. What really got me there, and I've been thinking this a lot over the last couple of weeks, is I can tell if I'm not really engaging as much as I should, either in my job or what I'm doing, if I'm not facing it. And if I'm not just facing it directly, sometimes I'll stand to the side or sometimes I will position myself differently. But either way, his rule here about how we present ourselves to the world really got me to think and even go deeper than just some of the examples he gave.
Yeah, that's the stand up straight with the shoulders back. That's a big one. I think that your posture definitely dictates what you're saying to the world, right? And the way he gets into it is this. For human beings, our most vulnerable parts are our chest, right? And when you're standing up straight with your shoulders back, it means that you're exposing yourself to the world. You're putting yourself out there. You're saying, you can throw whatever you want at me. And yeah, that's really important. And I think when somebody cowers in their body language, I've seen so many people do that lately since I've gotten to understand body language a little bit more. I've seen a lot of people do that. I've seen a lot of people, stare at the ground when they're talking, slump, things like that. But it's also, it's forced me to try to keep my shoulders up a little bit more when I'm talking with people, to try to walk around as in straighten up my posture whenever I'm going through a door. That's Jordan Harbinger from the Jordan Harbinger Show. Every time he walks through a door, he puts a reminder to himself to straighten up his shoulders and stick his chest out to make better first impressions on people. And I think it's really important.
Yeah, you can definitely tell when people are slumped over and have the posture that's not confident. And then it's also, communication, like we know, is much more about the nonverbals and our posture and how we present ourselves than the actual words. It's easier to understand why some people don't get taken as seriously. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm saying something and I'm not standing in a way that's really showing that I believe what I'm saying, people aren't going to take it seriously. So it has really big implications, I think, for everything. Also, just, you know, if I come in as a leader and I'm supposed to be in charge of something and I'm not standing with that confident posture or I'm not really taking charge in that way, people are going to get that message and people aren't really going to absorb the content of what I'm saying. And it confuses people. I mean, dogs are probably the greatest example we have in our life of, you know, they constantly are showing or displaying, you know, who's in charge and the hierarchy. Not that it's a big battle that everyone should try to be, you know, the top dog, but if
hello,
who's where in the hierarchy, it's just going to be confusing. And this helps us to really, like,
you cut out for just a second. The screen froze up, but I think we're back now. So you're saying it was the hierarchy. You were saying the hierarchy, we're constantly reminded of it.
Yeah, we're reminded of it by dogs. And you can see, gotcha, you know, which one's alpha, which one's, you know, more submissive. And they know where they fit in the pack. And not that it's everybody should be try to be, you know, the top dog, but we live in a hierarchy. You know, no matter where we go, you always look at a group. If you're going out to dinner, you know, everyone kind of looks to one person to make the decision, even if you're all agreeing on something.
Right.
So if we want to be that person or if we want to lead people in a way, we need to display that with our posture as well.
Well, that's the other thing, because I think, you know, one of his arguments there is that hierarchies are ancient. Like, they go back to like lobsters, and that's how ancient they are. Like, so he got criticized for using lobsters in the book, but what his argument was that hierarchies are so ancient, they go down to the most primitive of life forms on Earth, like life forms that have been here since the dawn of time. And, you know, the thing he was saying was that, you know, you need to understand that hierarchies exist and you need to take your place in them, because if you're at the bottom of the hierarchy, it's not a good place to be. And that's essentially what he's taking a very realist tone. And the reason why he's doing this is because a lot of people are out there saying they want to destroy the hierarchy. They want to get rid of the hierarchy. He's saying, it's not that the hierarchy is good or bad or anything like that. It's that it exists and you're not going to get rid of it no matter what you do. And so you need to understand how to act within it. Mike, you there? Hello? Just pause.
All right, we're back.
Hey, sorry, you were like, you were frozen there again for a second.
And I think it, you know, that this hierarchy exists outside of what we consider, you know, official structures, you know, mm-hmm. like in our jobs and in our families, but just in informal social groups too. And I think what it does is when we present our best selves, then it challenges other people to do the same, and it really improves the group, you know, rather than keeps it stagnant or drop that, you know, takes it down.
Right. So
people are more challenged to be better than themselves.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And like, yeah, I mean, like, and that's the thing, if you want it, and that's the other aspect. There's a lot of people out there who are, you know, they want to tear every order of society down. They want to tear everything down. And what he's saying is, like, you got to get yourself in order first. You got to get yourself in order first before you can start even thinking about trying to rip society apart or to try to reorder society. And that's it's a dangerous thing if you don't.
Set your house in perfect order before you criticize the world.
Right. Yeah. That's one of them. And then, do you want to do these in order? Cause we can go through a bunch of them, but,
Yeah.
Yeah. Set your house in perfect order before you criticize the world. That's number six. Yeah. Number two is kind of like, I think a really important one too, which is treat yourself like someone you're responsible for helping. Right.
That's a good one. Remember the study you talked about where people are more likely to if they were given medications for their animal, they're more likely to administer those medications to the pet than they would be to themselves.
Oh yeah. I'm way more likely to give my dog medication than I am myself.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, the same way people say, yeah, I'm my own worst critic. It's that mindset. And even in my job, when I'm working with people one-on-one, is if they're in a tough situation or doing a tough relationship or doing something they don't really like, it's always a question. If you had a friend doing this, what would you tell them?
Right.
And the answer is almost always different. And so that perspective right there, that one's helped me out a lot. Because, you know, if you think, okay, well, it's just me, you know, I can settle for less, or I can treat myself not as well. It's, if you can just shift that slightly and say, okay, how would I do this for someone else? And I don't know why, but it makes such a big difference.
You know, what's interesting is the way I looked at this, because I run business courses. Like, I teach people how to run businesses. And I get a lot of people who have made a lot of mistakes in the past. And a lot of people will come to me with their issues, their problems, not just their business problems, but also their mental problems and yeah, things that are holding them back. And I find I have a much easier time giving them advice than I do taking my own advice a lot of times when it comes to that stuff. Because, dude, I look back at my past, like I told you, I was up doing this wellness thing this past weekend, right? And when you do those types of things, like you reflect a lot, right? You reflect, you're meditating, you're kind of like going back. And I was having a real hurdle, like kind of forgiving myself for shit that I did, like, or didn't do, like way back. It's more the stuff I didn't do that I have a hard time forgiving myself for, you know? And it's, you know, and somebody had said to me, they're like, Chris, you got such an amazing life. You know, you're doing media, you're doing your business, you're living, you know, you've got an amazing girlfriend and everything like that. But I find, and I understand that. I know how amazing my life is, but like at the same time, like in my deep, dark part of my mind, I'm like, Chris, you're such a fucking shitbag. What the fuck is wrong with you? You know what I mean? Like, why would you think about that? Blah, 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 you know, that kind of shit. And I think we all go through that to some extent, but, I don't know, man. Sometimes I'm like, I'll be up at night. I'm like thinking about shit I did when I was 20 years old. And I'm like, why the hell did I do that? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I was doing a little bit of that yesterday, and it's interesting just the ability to put that into practice and look at myself as a friend, look at myself as someone I have well wishes for and want to do better. It seems to change that. And I think it changes it more putting it into practice.
Mm-hmm.
When you're actually doing it, the thought, and then you do it, makes a bigger difference than just thinking about it. Because you're right, if you think about it, then without doing it, it doesn't have that same staying power.
Yeah. Well, that, and like, I think that you have to constantly switch the conversation back to gratitude. Like, you got to constantly go back to being like thankful for what you've got right now. And I hate saying switch a conversation back to gratitude, because as we've talked about before, that's such a cliche freaking thing for a podcast to say. But like, I mean, it's true. You got to be grateful for what you have, and that'll turn all that other shit off. Like, when you finally realize that you're in a good place.
We should talk about ourselves and have those thoughts. And really, where does that lead you? It doesn't ever lead you any place great. You know, it can usually just lead to more negative feelings, and then more negative thoughts, and then more negative actions, either to get rid of that feeling or to unconsciously start living it again. And so,
yeah.
It doesn't bring you any better. So if you can realize that, then you can stop it there.
No, absolutely, man. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%, because if you do continually go down that rabbit hole, you're just going to end up in position to, not go anywhere. You're just going to be constantly going around circles in your own head.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, but noticing that pattern, you know, I think when I was talking to someone, talking to a therapist, and I was telling her about how, you know, I put myself on these, when I was first starting to get back into working out, maybe a year or so after I got out of the Marine Corps, I'd haze myself on these big death runs and then just like slay my body. And then, you know, you tell myself, you're a piece of shit. You can do more. You can do better than this. And then it was this weird way. And she said, okay, well, is that working out for you? What happens next? And I'd say, well, I'd get frustrated okay, well, what happens after that? Well, then I'd say in my head at some point, well, what's the point? I'm not doing well anyways. And then maybe just go eat some bad food, or, you know, go drink or do something that wasn't, you know, best for me. And so I was like, yeah, this really doesn't get me to where I want to be anyway. So it's counterproductive.
Yeah, I've been in those positions. I still do those death runs sometimes. I'm just like, stupid son of a bitch, what are you doing? But I find that runs make me feel better. Like, I do.
Yeah.
I really do find that they make me feel better. And, you know, as long as they're kind of like an addiction, where you can do them too much and they can hurt you. But at the same time, they're a good like exit out of your head, or like maybe a venture into your head too. But one that involves like moving your body, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because on that topic, I was just reading something that Chris Kresser was putting out, is that the attitude you have, the mindset that you have during exercise can greatly affect greatly change the effects it has on your body. So, you know, I just gave it a cursory glance, but that seems to make sense. You know, if you are believing something is working for you, if you are believing that you can do good things in the world, then you're more likely to be able to actually do those things.
Yeah. That's like setting an intention, right? Like, you set an intention before you actually go into something, and like, you set an intention for your workout, you set an intention for your meditation, you set an intention for all that stuff.
What's number three?
Number three is make friends with people who want the best for you. That's important. That's important because, I don't know, I think a lot of times, no matter how awesome your friends are from home and you know, the friends you grew up with, a lot of times you can run into people who don't want the best for you. And when I say don't want the best for you, it's not that they don't want you to have a good time. It's not that they don't want you to have fun. It's that they don't want you to be in position to make them look bad, or, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Or if I can think of it constantly, you know, about the the drinking buddies I had. We had great times together. But it wasn't, it was more, I can see it now as someone else who was stuck, who found me, who was definitely stuck. And, you know, we both wanted each other to stay at that stuck level, not addressing things we needed to, just getting, you know, drunk all the time. And it wasn't helpful for either of us.
Right. Yeah. The same thing with my friends from home. They're, a lot of them are stuck. A lot of them are just, yeah, there's a couple of them who were very close to me who were stuck in stuff that, you know, is a lot worse than when I was around, like drug abuse and things like that. But I remember growing up, like, I'd be like, yeah, I want to join the Marine Corps. They'd be like, oh, why do you want to do that? That's stupid. You want to, you know, why are you going to go and have somebody yell at you the whole time? And it was like the first, Marine Corps was the first thing that I did that was like my decision, right?
Yeah.
It was like the first thing that I did that was like my decision where I said, this is what I want for my life. This is how I want to be. And I remember catching it from everywhere. Like my friends were like, you're just going to go there. You're going to get yelled at. You're going to get they were saying I was going to get brainwashed, all the shit. And then like, nobody was happy for me.
People usually don't know that it's fear, and it's fear. And then it can be resentment, because when someone does something really awesome or is going to pursue something really difficult, I think even for a flash, people will look at the things that they really want to do, but maybe haven't had the courage to do yet. And it makes them pissed off at themselves and then project that onto you.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's just, it's a crazy thing that we do to each other. It's, you know, we're trying to pull each other back into the pot. I remember from the book, Jordan goes into like that story about the Brit who's being taking a tour of hell, and they're looking at three cauldrons, and they said this is where the Americans are. The demons are forking them back into the pot. And I'm going to tell this story in a really bad way. And then they show, you know, the France, and it's a bigger pot. And this is where the demons are forcing them back in the pot. And then they were talking about the Soviets, and there was no demon around the pot forcing them back in. And the guy asked, well, why are there no demons over here forcing them back in? Said, because the Russians, they pull each other down.
Yeah. Yeah. They take care of each other.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's really important. And no matter who, I think the other part of it is this, a lot of us, we feel lonely, and because we feel lonely, we feel like we're privileged to hang out with people, right? We feel like we're privileged to hang out with people. So that leads a lot of us to get into the wrong kinds of relationships, right? Particularly with women, because we feel like we're privileged to be around women. We feel like we're privileged to you know, be dating this person or that person. And so that could lead us into a relationship where that person doesn't have our best interests in mind, and they're constantly bringing us down.
Yeah, I could see that growing up, like, for a lot of reasons, and this happened probably until I made these big changes in my life in 2012 and started looking at these patterns. I'd usually end up falling into groups of people that were not really always up to no good, but not. I always seemed to find those people who would get in trouble or fuck up. And it probably went back to number one of how I presented myself, but two, you know, what I believed about myself. And I'd surround myself just kind of falling into these groups without intending to. And I can see it, okay, this is where I start to act like these other people and start to take on their traits, just like we all do.
Yeah, I see that too. And it's, you know, even like from boot camp, right? Like when you're in boot camp or when you're, when you're first coming out and you're going into a fleet, and yeah, it's like you have a choice when you're in the Marine Corps. You can hang out with people who are going to do the work and be happy about, or you can go to the smoke pit. And that's not to say that people who work hard aren't in the smoke pit, but that's the smoke pit is like where everybody goes to complain. And you're sitting there and you're like, oh man, fuck this, blah, blah, blah. Like, where Gunny's going to get pissed at this or like things like that. You know what I mean? Big green weenie, all that shit.
Everything sucks. This is bad. Why do we have to do this?
Right. Give me another camel. I want to get another smoke in before we go back in, that kind of shit, you know? And it's just, it's like you have that opportunity everywhere in life though. Like you could either make the best out of your situation or you could complain about it. And this is a big thing that I talked about a few weeks ago. No matter what job you're doing, if you're working at McDonald's, if you're out shoveling shit, if you're doing like day labor work, it's not a bad job. It's an opportunity to do something good. You know what I mean? And it just matters how you frame it. And other people are going to be a big part of framing that.
Yeah, you can have the best job in the world and convince yourself that it sucks by talking about it like that. And, you know, the way our brains work, the more you do that, the circuits are in synapses in our brain get stronger and stronger. And that's how we start looking at everything.
Mm-hmm. So number four, compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not to someone else, who someone else is today.
It's a huge one, especially for vets. I think a lot of people I talk to, a lot of vets are looking at how maybe their civilian friends are more advanced in their careers or have already finished college when they just got out. And that puts them in that impossible and a very negative mindset of always having to catch up and that kind of feeling of desperation because they're not that same level as someone else in a completely different circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember when I was getting out, all my friends, cause I came from the New York City area. All my friends had like really awesome jobs and they were all working in the city. They were all like dating, you know, in steady relationships with women and like, you know, starting families and things like that. And that was like, it was a rough period that led me to, I was like, I'm just going to party my ass off. And yeah, it was a rough time, like mid twenties was a rough time for me.
It's interesting. It's really interesting because it translates everything to, even during a race too, if I'm, you know, racing, you know, an endurance race, going through Ironman or a different triathlon, I'm constantly looking, you know, people in a totally different category too that are just destroying the course. You know, they're at a level I'm not at yet or maybe ever, which is fine. If I start looking at that, my energy is going to get drained. And I'm just going to think of all the things that are going wrong, and then my body is going to get that signal, and I'm going to get slower or weaker, and it's a completely deflating attitude to have.
Right. They pass you or something like that, or you're looking at them and you're like, all of a sudden you lose the energy from your limbs and you know, you're like, oh, I'm never going to be as fast as that guy.
Yeah. And it doesn't really help me with what I'm doing. It doesn't help me to be faster right there in that moment.
Right.
And so it's counterproductive even to winning.
Right. Yeah. That I imagine you have to have kind of like, you have to have an ironclad, you know, self-regulator in order to do that sport, man, because I don't know. I've thought about, like, I've done endurance races, like just Spartan races and things like that before. And I find that, you know, when I'm going through that and I'm trying to, like, if I were in it for, like, you know, just and felt like people had eyes on me, I'd be like, I would get so demoralized. I think you got such a strong mind for being able to do those sports, you know?
Well, it's also, I mean, there's the pressure off me. There's no pressure on me to win, because
yeah,
the people winning are at such a level above me. So that,
yeah,
that definitely helps. But, you know, I feel that when I'm a little closer to being able to win something, then, you know, the pressure really gets to me.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting just how, comparing myself with who I was yesterday, it really helps me to see incremental progress or see if I'm stepping back in areas in which I can improve.
Uh-oh.
Because if I'm comparing myself negatively, I mean, comparison is good. Don't get me wrong. If I see people doing something, I hope it will inspire me.
Mm-hmm.
When people are doing something right, and I'll say, oh, okay. And so maybe that's a good comparison. I can look at what I'm doing. But I think what Jordan was talking about is just this constant negative self-talk we can give ourselves.
And right.
Unworthiness.
Right. No, that's exactly it. I think, and when you live in that world, it's like you said, you can reformulate your brain and it could become a lot worse. This one, number five, I wanted to ask you about, because I don't have any children yet, but do not let your children do anything that makes you dislike them.
Right? That was an interesting one.
I was listening to his commentary on it, and I found it like, it was some of the most interesting parts of the book. How do you feel about that as a father?
I wasn't sure how I felt about it, if I could get on board with it at first, until I heard him out. Because my first impression when I heard that rule just being stated was just someone, you know, nagging a kid, hey, don't do that, stop doing that. And said, oh, I don't want to be that person. But then I thought of how even with friends or coworkers, how if people are doing something that really bothers me and I don't bring it up, I end up resenting them at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's something that they could do better. But the better example, like he says, is kids. And, you know, he states that our primary function as a parent is to raise kids who can be socially competent, who can have something to offer and get along in groups. And if we're not showing our kids that, hey, this will make you less desirable socially, this is something that can get in the way of you succeeding, then I think we're failing them. And so I do that with my kids in a way that they can hear, that comes from a place of compassion, where I don't just tell them what not to do. I say, hey, you know, sometimes it's easy with my two-year-old, because he's just at a level where I can say, hey, don't pull your sister's hair. She doesn't like that. You know, but then when you get to an age where, you know, the girl's five, you can start to say things like, hey, you know, if you say please for something, it makes people much more likely to want to give it to you. And therefore, you'd probably be able to get more things that you want.
Right.
If you say thank you, they'll remember you and they'll invite you back. And so she can take these things in. I can see her making the connections there. And I think the big thing is all how you present it.
Right. I think that's a big, big thing we got to think about as far as everything goes, because I think a lot of parents, they look at their children as if they're perfect, and they're not. Right. And then the thing about being a parent, particularly in today's day and age, you're legally obligated to be a parent until the child is 18 years old, right? As long as you take up that responsibility, you're legally obligated to do it. So no matter what, you're in it. You've got to make sure that you are doing a good job so that you're not releasing like something that is going to have a negative effect on society, because that's essentially what could happen, right? Like,
well, yeah, we all know the kids that were told they're the best thing ever, and their parents always just praised everything they did. You know, we hate those kids. Those kids suck. You know, I saw them on baseball teams. I saw them, you know, in school, and nobody wants to be around them. So the kid misses out because they don't understand. Wait a second. I was told I was perfect. I was told everything I did was great.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody just starts ignoring them because it's not my job to fix them. Let's just find someone else to hang out with.
Yeah. Yeah. I was probably one of those little kids. I was a little annoying asshole. Yeah. Cause my mom, my mom's a single Italian mama, right? Single Italian mother. So like, you know, like Latin and Italian women, they're like, you know, their sons are like the kings. Right. And yeah. So my mom would be like, Christopher, you're the smartest boy in the world. And I would walk around like, I remember like, I have friends who've known me since like kindergarten, first grade. And they'd be like, dude, you were the most annoying little kid. Like you would walk around telling people your IQ and like tell people like that. Yeah, I was such an idiot. I was such a little idiot. But yeah, don't do that. Because eventually I got wedgied and destroyed and beaten up and all kinds of stuff. So don't allow your kid to go to school like that.
Well, it's really just a shirking of responsibility if you're doing that to your kid. Because it's harder to have the conversation of correction, show them how they can be better. It's easier just to let someone just go off and be mediocre or do things that bother people. So it really comes down to investing and having the courage to have difficult conversations.
Mm-hmm. We talked about set your house in perfect order before you criticize the world. That one's extremely important, I think. And it's something that I think particularly young people need to pay attention to, because a lot of times what you'll see with kids, particularly in college, is that they'll shirk their own responsibility because they think that they're here to fix the world, right? Yeah. So, and you know, they won't think about their own responsibility in the world. They'll join their social justice clubs, or they'll focus more on these things, but they're not keeping their own little corner of the world tidy.
Yeah, and it sends a mixed message. But then you realize, okay, a lot of this book, since he's a psychologist, talks about, I think, you know, the different psychological defenses or ego defenses. So projection, if we're dissatisfied with things in the world, it could be that we're dissatisfied with the way we're interacting, what we're doing in our own personal life. Maybe this is just a way of putting that off so we don't have to deal with our own shit.
Right. Pursue what is meaningful, not what is expedient. What'd you make of that one?
That's a good one. What I made of that one is that it's easy to get caught up in things that sound like they're just easier to do or take opportunities that maybe don't align with my values.
Right.
I can think of one I did is I took I became an affiliate, somewhat of a sponsorship from a supplement company.
Mm-hmm.
And I it was exciting because I'd never gotten this, you know, sponsorship like this before. And I could see, okay, some of the products are pretty cool and what I like and what I can agree with. And a lot of them weren't, you know, I had a lot of the pre-workout stuff that's just kind of like meth, essentially. And a lot of the stuff that didn't really align with who I was and the message I was putting out. And but it was, you know, like it was expedient. It was right there. I could get it. I was in. And I said, maybe I can use this to do something good. But it didn't. I noticed this, along with other times I've done this, I end up starting to resent myself. I started just be disappointed with myself. Mm-hmm. And so in the end, it set me back more, I think, than it really helped me go forward. And I think that's with anything. If we do just what's easy to do, take what's here, right here in front of us, all the time, then you're actually setting yourself back for what you really want to do. And you end up not really liking yourself as much.
Right. No, I can definitely see that. That happens not just in those types of situations, but like, I think a lot of times with relationships, when you get yourself into casual relationships, that are convenient, a lot of times those casual relationships can lead to higher commitments. Like, you know, somebody gets pregnant in the relationship or something like that. And then you end up spending, you know, 18 to 20 years with somebody who like you didn't have a good connection with from the beginning. I think a lot of times people get themselves wrapped up into those types of situations by accident, you know, because they were pursuing an expedient relationship at first.
Yeah, exactly. I think this one was a little easier to get into. He didn't need to explain it quite as much, which was cool.
Yeah. Tell the truth or at least don't lie. That one's pretty straightforward too, I think. But, you know, his opinion is that lying leads to hell. Like lying, we could create hell on earth and we can create it by lying.
Yeah, he uses the example of people who are homeless people. Not just, I mean, because they're homeless, but people you could see who are just deeply disturbed, addicts, addicted to something, or people who are just so warped and how they were lying to themselves that you could see it on their face, and they're building their own personal hell because of it.
Right. And there's that aspect of it, and then the societal aspect of it too, because I was reading in conjunction with this, I was actually reading Alexander Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago.
Yes.
And his is all about, that book is all about how lies led to the Gulag. Like, just societal level lies. Like, nobody was telling the truth. Nothing was, the whole society was based on a lie.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you can't tell the truth, then there's no basis for trust with people. Right. And then when there's no basis for trust, it's hard to know if your senses are giving you accurate data. And so everything is in question. And so
right.
Nothing makes sense. And it leads to fear, which, you know, in the extreme examples, leads to persecution of other people. And you're right, Gulag.
Right. Persecution to uphold the lie. It was it's such a big theme there. And it's like, you know, and that's what, you know, I think part of the reason that Jordan Peterson's doing this is because he believes that our own actions can contribute to suffering here on this earth. Right. So like, if you lead a good and honorable life, it'll decrease, you know, societal level suffering. And the more you can avoid lying, the more you'll avoid that type of suffering, right? Or you'll avoid increasing that type of suffering here on earth.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, you know, if I'm telling the truth, being honest with people, then it gives them the opportunity to know that, oh, they can tell the truth around me. And maybe it just had exponential effect. Huge either way we go on this.
Number nine, assume that the person you are listening to might know something that you don't.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah, it comes back to arrogance or being humble, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And definitely understanding that you know, other people out there might know a lot more about something than you do, and don't just go blabbering off at your mouth off in the mouth to before you had a chance to really listen.
Yeah, this always happens, you know, when everyone growing up, teenage years, you know, like, oh, my parents don't know anything. And, you know, you learn later on that some of the things that, you know, that they were doing and telling us really actually worked. We would have saved ourselves a lot of suffering had we listened a little more. But that's kind of a stage of life thing. I like this one because it helps me approach something with a beginner's mind. And it helps me approach something with just the idea that, well, I might have something to learn, which is always exciting. Because if I just think, like, no, they're an idiot, they don't have it figured out, then really narrows my possibilities of what I could accomplish.
Yeah. Number 10 is be precise in your speech.
I'm tough. This one's tough for me.
Why so?
I don't know if it's, I see this more when I'm trying to explain something that's difficult, but it's also, I think it's difficult in this day, I think, especially with social media, because you hear people talk, describe things, oh, that's the best thing ever, or this thing is amazing. And hyperbole, or maybe exaggerate, and it really degrades exactly what the message is. Maybe that thing we're reviewing isn't amazing. Maybe it's just okay.
Right. Right. This, I think this one goes into, like, leaving loopholes open for people, right? Leaving loopholes open for people to lie or not describe the truth in a proper way. Because if you don't speak in precise speech, a lot of times it can lead you to really, like, not get to what you want. Right? To not get to what you want and not get what's exactly needed.
Yeah. Clear communication. This one was pretty self-explanatory to me.
Yeah.
And it helped me realize where I can improve.
Mm-hmm. Number 11, do not bother children when they are skateboarding.
What'd you make of this one?
I thought, I like this one because, I think that, you know, in a lot of ways we got to let kids be kids. We got to let kids go out there. We got to let them fall down. We got to let them, you know, take chances, take risks. We got to let them, in a lot of ways build their own hierarchies, right? Because if they're not able to do that, they're not getting an experience that's going to allow them to grow, mature, and develop the way they should. Right. But I think what he's getting at here is, a lot of, that free play that we had as kids is going away, and that children's chances of taking risks for themselves and being who they in creating their own challenges they're going away because we're protecting them too much.
Yeah. They don't have a chance to experience failure or experience, you know, something that doesn't work out. But you're right, taking those risks. I also saw this one too is allowing people to find their own place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And every generation has their thing that the parents say, oh, this is the worst thing ever. And we need to allow people to find their way instead of just prescribing exactly what they should be doing, which I guess is exactly what you're saying too. We're very right. similar. And
yeah. I think if you have everything prescribed for you and you're not taking those risks, it takes a lot of the zest out of life, right? Like you're not getting what you need. I think we all need that risk. Otherwise you're going to go crazy at some point, right?
Yeah. And speaking of going crazy, I can hear my two kids about to come downstairs in a second here.
Let's get to this last one then.
Number 12.
Pet a cat when you encounter one on a street.
Yeah, what's this that? One was probably the most odd.
Yeah.
Mall. What this?
When I was listening to it, he went through this whole thing about why he was explaining cats rather than dogs and things like that. I think it means that you need to take the opportunity to appreciate the friendliness and the people and the things that you encounter in life when you encounter them.
Yeah, being present with the moment, looking at exactly what's there. Yeah, stop and have that conversation with someone.
Right. Right. Exactly. Like stop it for a moment, being like, hey, what's going on? You know, let's talk for a minute. Let's be genuinely interested in each other for a second and then, you know, go about our day.
It's interesting how many of these conversations, because I've taken a lot of time to do that over the last 5 years. Usually those ones where I'm meeting or talking with something in a random place have led to a lot bigger things. Like, for example, I was running on a treadmill, and so I'm practicing to carry a flag for this next Ironman again. And the person next to me, I don't know how, but said, wait, are you that flag carrying guy? And I said, yeah, I don't get recognized a lot for this, believe me. But she said, oh, okay. I've seen you. I was at the same race and we got to talk, and it turns out we had a lot in common. And, you know, talking about, you know, fundraising ideas, talking about big events that we're probably going to do together. But had I just kind of blown this conversation off, you know, a lot of these conversations that I've had in airports or just waiting, you know, for a shuttle to a hotel end up being pretty big. So there's a lot of opportunity in them as well.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's how things happen, right? You meet people who aren't really in your circle and you get to know them a little bit, and that could lead to new things, right? And I always say that people need people, right?
That's how we're wired, man.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you got your tribe waking up over there. I can hear them going. So
tell them to not do anything that makes me dislike them.
Exactly, exactly. I'm going to go find a cat to pet, right, feed on my dog in the process. So this is our fourth one together, right?
Number four.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I hope everybody's enjoying these and that you're checking out both, the Warrior Soul podcast and Transitions from War. Make sure you put those both on your list. Mike and I have been going back and forth each week. I'll be on his show 1 week. He'll be on my show 1 week. And, it's a new experiment we're working out. We're trying to turn it into something a little bit bigger. We're trying to come up with a name for the whole thing. So, somebody suggested one, but then we had flashbacks to Two Girls, One Cup, and, long story. Yes. And, so if you got a name, we're trying to come up with some names. So,
all right, man, always a pleasure talking with you.
All right, guys, take care, Mike. Enjoy your morning. And then everybody out there, get out there and live your best lives while you can.